This podcast was recorded Thursday, May 14th at 10:16 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like state and federal lawmakers will suspend the gasoline tax and drivers won't even notice. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who pass symbolic tax cuts that voters quickly forget. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, Sherrod Brown's kinder tone towards crypto. But first, with Ohio's primary behind us, we can really focus on the November election, in particular, the race for governor. Now, the primary did not really change anything. Democrat Amy Acton was unopposed, and Republican Vivek Ramaswamy easily defeated his long-shot opponent, Casey Putsch. So we knew it was going to be Acton and Ramaswamy in November, and now it is official. But with 6 months to go, their campaigns are ramping up. Reporters and voters are starting to pay more attention. We're seeing more ads on TV, more social media activity. So the race is on, so to speak. To reset the scene, Mike DeWine leaves office at the end of the year. He's done his bit. Term limits prevent him from running again. So, for the first time in 8 years, Ohio will have a new governor, and it will be someone who comes from outside government. Tech billionaire Vivek Ramaswamy, who briefly ran for president, or Amy Acton, who did serve in government for about a year, famously as Ohio's health director at the start of the COVID pandemic, but she has not held elected office. The latest polls have the two candidates basically tied as we head into the summer months. National politicos are keeping an eye on this race. Earlier this spring, the University of Virginia's Center for Politics, Sabatow's crystal ball, moved the Ohio governor's race from likely Republican to leans Republican. So to discuss that rating, to get an Ohio native's national look on the Ohio governor's race, we welcome back Kyle Kondik, who serves as managing editor of Sabatow's Crystal Ball. Kyle, welcome back to Snollygoster. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
What does it mean to go from likely Republican to leans Republican?
It just indicates we're expecting a more competitive race and that there's more uncertainty. If it were a toss-up, we would think it's kind of a true 50-50 proposition. Still giving her the benefit of the doubt to Republicans in Ohio in both, as we're speaking now, the Senate and the gubernatorial races. But they both seem like, you know, pretty competitive, might be decided by, you know, a few points either way. One thing about Ohio is that even before it's Republican turn at the federal level in the Trump era, Republicans have really dominated in state government for the last few decades. Yeah. And at the end of Mike DeWine's term in office, Republicans will have held the governorship for 32 of 36 years. They'll have held the state Senate for that entire time. They'll have held the state House for almost all that time. They'll have held the other statewide executive elected offices for, again, most of that, you know, a similar amount of time there. So I think for Democrats in Ohio, there is a sense of they kind of need to prove it, I think. Mm-hmm. Outside of 2006, it's just been a lot of heartbreak, basically, and, yeah, and a lot of lost elections for Democrats in Ohio, including in 2018 when Sherrod Brown got reelected against a pretty weak opponent when he was still in the Senate. But, you know, Republicans did win all the statewide executive races. They were close-ish, but they were all decided by roughly like 3 to 6 points. So still a bit of a generic edge for Republicans in Ohio, but definitely looking, you know, certainly more competitive than 2022 was, and maybe more competitive than 2018 was, too.
Yeah, I mean, given all that, Ohio voted for Donald Trump by 11 points 2 years ago. Governor DeWine won re-election 4 years ago by 25 points, granted against he was an incumbent against a weaker opponent. Why does Amy Acton even have a chance, given what you just said and those numbers?
I think it's a combination of the political environment. And also, you know, Vivek Ramaswamy is certainly different than a lot of the Republicans that have come before him. You know, he's you think about the four two-term Republican governors that Ohio has had recently. You know, all of them were kind of older school, kind of pre-Trump sort of Republicans. George Voinovich, Bob Taft. I mean, John Kasich, I think when he came in 2011, was probably the most kind of the most kind of rabble rouser.
Yeah.
And he kind of, you know, and actually by the time he left office, he was, you know, anti-Trump and, you know, running against Trump in the Republican presidential primary in 2016, backing Joe Biden in 2020. And then you have DeWine, who I think is sort of the quintessential kind of establishment Republican. Ramaswamy is different. Ramaswamy is much younger. He doesn't have any experience in office, as you mentioned. And I think is more, you know, is sort of a Republican who's emerged in the Trump era. And so I just think he's you know, he's just different.
Looking back at when Kasich first won, he won in 2010, defeated the incumbent, Ted Strickland. He had served in Congress for a long time. He'd been the chair of a major committee. I think it was the Budget Committee, if I'm not mistaken. So he was a high ranking member of Congress, but he had been out of office for several years. And he was kind of, you know, he's kind of a loose cannon. He was kind of a renegade. A lot of people in the State House had misgivings about him. Ramaswamy has many of those same, has that same vibe kind of bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, and there's been a sense from, I think, Ramaswamy that he's kind of thrown out these sort of big proposals here and there. You know, there's one about talking about how, you know, maybe Ohio has, you know, too many colleges, universities, or that maybe some of them would need to be, you know, consolidated or go away for budget reasons. And, you know, he sort of trimmed his sails on that a little bit. I feel like there have been other developments like that. You know, he had that interview with Ezra Klein that, you know, that's going to show up in ads from the Democrats from a couple of years ago, talking about, you know, whether I think it was Medicare and Medicaid were, you know, was a mistake or something like that.
Bad
again,
idea.
Things that he's going to, you know, that's going to come up, that are going to come up in the campaign. And, you know, it actually leads to this kind of interesting discussion, and that, of course, you know, Ramaswamy's the, you know, the Republican candidate, the sort of conservative political leanings, you know, acting Democrat liberal leanings. But, you know, in some ways, it's like who's actually the more kind of conservative candidate? And I kind of wonder if Acton were to actually win, it might be because voters would perceive her that way, that maybe she would be rocking the boat a little bit less than Ramaswamy would. So I just find that sort of an interesting dynamic as we go here. You know, of course, Acton worked for Mike DeWine. And, you know, is it in some sense that she's maybe more of a continuation of DeWine's style? Again, even though DeWine has endorsed Ramaswamy, you know, and again, DeWine's always been a loyal Republican in that way.
Yeah. Acton's role during COVID. I mean, you have to argue that the reason why she is running for governor is because of her role during COVID. We didn't know who she was. I mean, I couldn't, you know, tell you. I didn't know who she was when she was the health director before the pandemic started. During that time, she was very well liked by Ohioans. Those on the far right, though, they hated her. I don't think hated is too strong a term. They hated her and Governor DeWine for shutting down the state. But she left office with high favorability ratings. Her role as COVID health director is why she's the Democratic nominee. In your mind, does that help or hurt her? Or is it too far in the past? What do you think about her role in COVID?
I think there's a lot to unpack here. Clearly, as you suggest, nobody, you know, the reason why she's been able to be the Democratic nominee and, you know, be prominent in public life in Ohio is because of her time as the health department director. And I do kind of wonder if ultimately her greatest appeal is to people who are voting Democratic anyway, and that is not a big enough group on its own to win a statewide race in Ohio. Like, I do think probably the turnout dynamic in Ohio, it's going to, you know, smaller than a presidential election, and probably will be less Republican leaning of an electorate, certainly than 2024 was. But she's also going to need to win over some people who voted for Trump, and, you know, the sort of quote unquote COVID czar. I just, that profile may be, you know, maybe challenging in terms of trying to win people over. Now, I think there's also a possibility that, you know, certainly Ramaswamy's campaign is sort of going after Acton in, you know, for her, you know, for the things that she did in that role. I kind of wonder if maybe it's yesterday's news in some sense, and that voters are maybe going to be more focused on, you know, maybe they don't even want to. I sort of get the sense whenever COVID comes up that people just don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
And look, maybe that makes the attacks effective, because Acton potentially being governor may remind people of the hard times of COVID. So again, I think there's just a lot to unpack. But I think the worry for Acton to me would be that, you know, the people who remember the sort of the press conferences she had with DeWine and sort of like, you know, your sort of stereotypical, like, you know, liberal wine moms, you know, yes. remembering those press conferences. Well,
she was a very empathetic figure.
But again, those folks are reliable voters who probably are voting Democratic anyway. Yeah. So how does Acton expand the tent when she has more of a challenge in that in a red leaning state? I mean, Ramaswamy just needs to keep the Trump coalition like mostly together.
Yeah.
Whereas Acton is the one who has to convert more people. You know, the other thing that's really important in this race, I think, and this is true for the Senate race as well, and actually also the 9th congressional district race in Toledo, where Marcy Kaptur, Democrats trying to win another term, is you do have Libertarian candidates on the ballot in all three of those races. And you know, one of the things I kind of struggle with is like, man, how's a Democrat going to get to 50% plus one in Ohio? But they don't necessarily need to. They may need to get to 49 or just 48 to win in all those races we're talking about or that I mentioned. Yeah. And that all of a sudden becomes a little bit more plausible, I guess.
Yeah, that's how Marcy Kaptur won 2 years ago. I mean, the Libertarian candidate, you could argue, took enough away from Derek Merrin, who is her opponent again this year, giving her another term. You know, Bowling Green State University did a poll going back to how the COVID plays. And it really goes to your point. Basically, one third of the respondents said Acton's service during COVID will make them more likely to support her. One third said less likely. And one third were like, that doesn't matter. So I think it definitely cuts both ways. But I do think, because Ramaswamy ran a lot of ads before the primary, attacking Amy Acton as shut down Amy, criticizing her for canceling the election. And I think that was to mobilize his base, who really do not like Amy Acton, to give him some cred on the far right. And I don't think it was really aimed at independents or Democrats. It was aimed at his voters to sort of mobilize them, to remind them, well, I'm on your side.
And that plays into, I think, a larger kind of Republican strategy in this election, because you know, Republicans are just really worried about their own base level turnout. And actually, I think in the primary, again, I wouldn't use the primary to predict anything necessarily, but I actually think you saw a little bit of that turnout weakness, because there really was nothing to drive turnout on either side. You know, I mean, yeah, there were individual competitive races down the ballot, but, you know, effectively the Senate and gubernatorial primaries on both sides were either unopposed or very lightly opposed. You know, Sherrod Brown had a fringe opponent and Ramaswamy had a fringe opponent. But, you know, the votes cast in each party primary were pretty similar. You know, Republicans had a little bit of an edge. They were a bit over 800,000 total votes. Democrats were a little under 800,000 votes. But that was certainly a much more narrow spread than what you saw in 2022 and even in 2018. And you've seen this all over the country that, you know, Democrats have just been sort of more motivated to come out in these lower turnout special elections or primaries or whatnot. And, you know, I think it probably is a sign of, you know, higher Democratic enthusiasm, lower Republican enthusiasm, which, again, you see not only in terms of turnout, but I think you also see in the polls in terms of, you know, asking people how likely they are to vote in the midterm. And so part of what Ramaswamy needs to do is make sure that enough of his, you know, Trump supporting base voters show up. And the COVID messaging, to your point, may be well designed to do that, even if maybe truly persuadable voters at the middle of the electorate maybe aren't really keyed into it as much.
Yeah, if you look back to the last time a Democrat won the governor's race in Ohio, it was 2006. And that was a wave election year. There was George W. Bush. The Iraq War was going very poorly. It was the year after Katrina and the federal response to that, which fell short. So there were a lot of, and here in Ohio, there was a scandal involving Governor Taft at the time. Not a huge scandal, but, you know.
It's a scandal that seems very quaint by modern standards, but it was a really big deal back then. Yes.
Like nothing, playing golf, you know, whatever.
Right, right.
But so in that sense, I think the Republican turnout was, Democrats came out, but the Republicans also stayed home. And I think that's what probably Ramaswamy's fear is, that people just don't, his supporters don't come out. Republicans don't come out. Because if Trump's popularity continues to go down, if gas prices remain high, we don't know how this Iran war is going to go. There's a lot of variables, even with 6 months to go.
Yeah, that's the opening, I think, for both Acton and Sherrod Brown in the Senate race, is that, you know, compared to 2018, again, when Democrats came up short in the governor's race and in the other statewide elected offices, executive offices, was that, you know, the economic climate was really not that bad. And even though Trump's approval rating was weak, perceptions of him on the economy were better. And it was a wave that hit in a lot of places. I would say that it didn't really hit as hard in Ohio, and Ohio had already taken a turn to the right. But the danger for Republicans is that the sort of overall kind of political environment, the political mix, is actually worse than 2018 was, and that it is kind of more like 2006. Now, Ohio also was a much different state in 2006 because yes. back then, somebody like Sherrod Brown or Ted Strickland could dominate in eastern Ohio, basically win maybe not all of Appalachia, but almost all of Appalachia. And there was still a lot of ancestral Democratic DNA in that part of the state. That's all kind of gotten wiped out. I mean, Democrats have, you know, back when Ken Blackwell lost the governor's race in a landslide to Ted Strickland, Blackwell still carried Hamilton County, if memory serves. So, you know, Cincinnati is. Cincinnati, you know, Hamilton County is now a blue county, but, and, you know, Franklin County or Columbus is a much more Democratic county. But so much of the rest of the state is either went from blue or purple to dark red, or went from dark red to even darker red.
Yeah.
And, you know, in order to win, you know, I mean, Acton is not going to win those places we're talking about. But, you know, instead of losing by 40 or 50, maybe she needs to lose by 30 or 40. And there's some other, you know, key places around the state that I think we'll be watching that, you know, the Democrats have had success in the past, but maybe not recently.
Yeah. Well, one other question. Ramaswamy is of South Asian descent. He's Hindu. He gets a lot of racist comments on his social media feeds. Casey Putsch, who made an issue of Ramaswamy's heritage and religion in the primary, he got 17% of the vote, higher in some of the more rural counties. What role does Ramaswamy's race and religion play in the election, do you think?
You know, it's hard to say, though, although when I talk to people who, you know, are following the race, people that I sort of trust in Ohio, they do bring it up as, you know, hey, he's going to have to deal with this this racist sentiment, which is whatever you think of Ramaswamy, is disgusting, but may be a reality. I don't know how real that is. I mean, actually, you could have imagined the protest vote being higher in the primary. So again, I don't know how meaningful it is, and it's kind of a hard thing to quantify. But it is possible that would be some sort of factor. You know, it's also true that while Ohio has technically had a woman as governor, Nancy Hollister, who served for like, I don't know, 2 weeks or something, yeah. or less than 2 weeks after I think after George Voinovich left for the U.S. Senate at the end of his term. But Ohio has not elected a woman as governor either. So yeah. there's going to be some sort of history made here anyway.
And she is Jewish, too, which is another
right.
variable.
Right. And, you know, that's another thing that unfortunately we see a lot of anti-Semitism in public life. And frankly, I think it's getting worse. And I think some of the things that you've heard about Ramaswamy from some of the real kind of fringe far right people. It's, you know, there's disgusting stuff all around. Again, whatever you think of Acton or Ramaswamy.
Yeah. I mean, it's what Casey Putsch was doing in the last days of the primary was really pretty awful, to be honest, some of the social media yeah. feeds. Kyle Condick, managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball from the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Great to have you again on Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. When he was in the U.S. Senate, Sherrod Brown was not a fan of cryptocurrency. He was chair of the Senate Banking Committee, and he watched as scandals hit some in the crypto industry. And he said that crypto firms betrayed the public interest. And when crypto allies started targeting him before the 2024 campaign, he said, quote, "Bring them on." Well, they brought it. It being $40 million. $40 million from crypto supporting PACs. That's what they spent to defeat Brown. And it worked. Brown lost to Bernie Moreno in a fairly close race. So you have to figure that $40 million spent against you probably meant 3 or 4 points in that race. Well, Politico reports that Brown has softened his stance on crypto as that same PAC is preparing to again to spend scores of millions of dollars in favor of crypto-friendly lawmakers and candidates. Here is the statement the Brown campaign gave to Politico. Quote, Sherrod Brown recognizes that cryptocurrency is part of America's economy. He'll keep an open mind towards all issues as they come before the Senate and will work to ensure that as more people use cryptocurrency, it expands opportunity and lifts up Ohioans. Unquote. Well, from bring 'em on to keeping an open mind, it's a pretty shrewd move for a one-time crypto skeptic Sherrod Brown. We'll see if it keeps crypto money out of Ohio's Senate race between Brown and his competitor, incumbent Senator John Houston. I doubt it. I think you're going to see some crypto money flow in John Houston's direction. But for trying, Sherrod Brown gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. We're going to be off next week. I'm going to take a few days off. So we'll take next week off and return the last week of May. For our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.